Hey, podcasters, welcome to another edition of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Master Doll. On today's episode, we have two very special guests coming to talk to us about. One is a new engine that's being designed and developed. It was originally developed in the late 1880s, and it's making a comeback, we think. It's a fascinating design. It's an opposed piston engine. I learned quite a bit talking with the CEO of the company, and you're going to hopefully get the same excitement out of hearing about this engine that I did. And it's really exciting to hear that it's something that doesn't need computers and turbochargers and things to really make it work. It's doesn't have a lot of fancy glitches, I should say, or fancy pieces. The other one that we're going to interview is, remember, it was like 2 weeks ago, I think it was, I talked to you about Checker Motor Corporation building a sport truck. I happen to have the owner. I happened to reach out to him and have an interview with him, Steve Catrino. He's got a great little company going on there, a lot of excitement. He's got a wonderful accent. So I had a great time listening to him and talking to him. I hope you'll enjoy the interview too. So those two interviews coming up. I did have a Toyota Land Cruiser this week, but there was an issue with the windshield wipers on it, so I won't be reviewing a vehicle. Instead, we'll do the two interviews. But first, let's go over some news. Today is February 2nd. And yesterday, and that's important because yesterday sales results came out, and each month sales results come out, and they're really a good indicator where the market is going, and indicator of what people are buying, and you know what's hot, what's not hot. So on the truck side, to nobody's surprise, the Ford F-Series was number one among all trucks. There's a little caveat to this one. It's all F-Series, so anything that has an F-Series badge on it, so F-150, 250, 350, 450, 550, 650. Ford says that they break apart those sales, but I've never seen it as far as the 450, 550, and 650. It's just they just say Ford F-Series. So in any result, they did have a great month. They're up 12.5%. That's largely driven by the fact they have everything so brand new. I mean, the Raptor is coming out. The new Super Duties are out. The F-150 has been updated yet again, and they actually have the 2018 model coming out this fall that's updated yet again. I mean, that vehicle has been updated so much in the last 3 or 4 years. It's a lot more than had been in the previous 10 years. Number two, Chevy Silverado. No surprise, they'll be neck and neck most of the year. It'll be Ford F-Series and Chevy Silverado. Silverado, they also do the same thing. Anything that's the 2500, 3500 Silverados are also included in this product mix of sales. They had 35,000 units sold, so they were down, you're about 22,000 units difference between the two models. They were down 6.1%. That's largely because Chevy has taught their fans to only buy trucks during truck months because they do their truck months several times throughout the year, and you'll see it. Their sales just balloon during truck month, and then they fall flat or even negative on non-truck months. I think they got a marketing problem there. I think they need to have sales consistent across the board. But, you know, if you're going to buy a Silverado, wait for a truck month. That's the best way to buy one. Ram was number three, which is no surprise. They were number three all last year. The 1500, 2500, 3500, that's all they build of Rams. And it's all that's the trucks. They were up 4%, 33,769 units. It's pretty close, Silverado. Only a couple thousand units separating the two. Ram continues to climb. I mean, they have exciting. It's a great looking truck, great styling. It's got some unique powertrains in the half ton. They offer a lot of variety. And I'm hearing word that there's a new truck coming to Chicago. I don't know if it's a special edition. I don't know what it is, but my Ram source is telling me that they drove a truck off the production line. Fourth, GMC Sierra, 13,732 units. Pretty respectable. They're down 4.5%. So Chevy and GMC were both down for the month. Toyota Tacoma, 12,509 units. Kills the midsize market. I mean, it doubles most midsize sales. They were down 1.6%. Who knows? Toyota has some production capacity issues. And so each month is a little bit of a gamble of what's going to be up, what's going to be down, what customers are buying, what's on the books. The Tundra was down 8.4%, which sounds like a lot, but they had sales units of 6,600 units. When you're talking that number, it's not that many units. It's one of the oldest trucks in the marketplace, though. Even though they talk about 2014 was a facelift, the powertrain is still about 10 years old. So I would expect something at Chicago. My sources tell me something's going to be in Chicago. I expect Toyota to do something sizable with the new truck. I just don't see a whole lot of powertrain stuff. But, you know, I hope they do. I think that's what they need. But when I talk to Toyota, that's just not what they talk about. Chevy Colorado, 7th, 6,400 units, almost caught the Tundra. 16.4% was their growth last month, year over year. I think the Colorado's got a lot going for it. I think the ZR2 is going to really benefit that brand. It's exactly what they needed, and that's coming out later in 2017. Nissan Frontier, the good old Nissan Frontier. This truck's 12 years old, maybe older. But it's fantastic. Every time I drive one, I just want to go get dirty and tear up the dirt. It's the powertrain and the transmission shift points are awful. There's nothing really great about it, but it's such a fun truck to drive around. They had an exciting year last year. They became one of the cheapest trucks in the marketplace. They're down like $5,000 versus other vehicles. So let me say that again, slower, because I'm trying to talk slower these days. They were about $5,000 cheaper than any other units out there, and the other manufacturers on the base level. And they had a great year, even though it's so old. But they were down nearly 40%. That doesn't bode well. They need some more sales, or they need to redo it. And I think they need to redo it. Nissan Titan was up 195.4%. Woohoo! 2,700 units. I don't know. I'm not a hater of the Titan. I like the Titan a lot. I just think that they have some problems getting it out to the consumers, and I think they have some dealership issues. I think they have a lot of issues related to changing from a car company to a truck company. And when you start talking about 2,700 units, you're not a player. You're just not a player. And so, yeah, you have these fantastic growth percentages, but you're just not selling that much volume. And so I think they're going to make a lot of moves this year. They have the single cab coming out, which is going to be their fleet truck. They're going to have a V6 and a King Cab model, so they have more variety. I would expect when it gets fully launched and all the different varieties are out there and they work on the dealership a little bit, they should be a 10,000, 15,000 a year truck. That's where they should be. They should be competing better. 2,700 units just isn't enough. Rounding off is the Honda Ridgeline, I believe. Let me double check. No, excuse me, one more below it. Honda Ridgeline, up 133,950%. Again, it's the same idea. Of the Titan, it's the same thought process. The Ridgeline's a niche truck for me. I like it. I've driven it. It's the most comfortable truck I've ever driven on and off road because it's a unibody construction. It's just not what you think of a pickup. I think they built it exactly what they needed to do, and I think that Honda did a great job. It's just not for everybody. The GMC Canyon. Down 9.3%, so 2,000 units. So you look at Chevy, and the only thing that was up was the Colorado. The Canyon is an interesting brother to the Colorado. The Denali trim is going to help because that's how they're positioning the GMC brand these days. They're positioning that brand as more premium, and so they're trying to get track more customers. So the number of sales volume is always going to be a little bit lower than Chevy because Chevy's going to be more the entry-level brand. The Denali trim is interesting. I need to drive one a little bit longer. I drove one in Texas a little bit. And it's really comfortable and it's really stylish in the GMC Canyon, but it's probably going to be like $50,000 in a midsize truck, and I don't know if I'm there yet. And that's quite a bit of money. Also making news this week, so moving on, is the Chevy Silverado. The 2019 model was recently spotted. It's clad in all sorts of camouflage. I mean, you can't even see anything in this truck. It's just one big molding of black plastic and black camouflage. But they loaded it up from a tech center. Spy photographers must have snuck in or somehow got photos. It says it's 2019. You could probably see that. I would say the Detroit Auto Show next year, 2018, would be the reveal. I think it's going to be quite a bit. I think they're going to make quite a bit of changes interior. I think they keep their technology, which is they've done a good job with their teen drive and their OnStar and their Chevy MyLink. I do think it's going to have a Duramax diesel in it in the V8. I think in a half ton. It just makes sense. It'll probably have a 10-speed. Probably not in the 1500, maybe, you know, because they're going to roll it out as capacity builds up and building that transmission. So you'll see that coming soon. I think that'll be a, like I said, I think it's going to be a 20. It'll be 2019 model. So yeah, I'm thinking it's 2018 Detroit Auto Show. So that's going to be in end of January next year. So it takes a full year to get around. And that's basically the news this week. That, like I said, we're in between auto show seasons. So next week in Chicago, or I said this in the previous podcast, next week in Chicago, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, will be a lot of new reveals. I do know that Chevy's going to have a special edition there. I think Ram's going to have something there. And I feel strongly Toyota's going to have something there. Nissan's talking about doing something there as well. So I think there's going to be some exciting new products coming out and definitely some things to talk about. So let's move on. Let's get to our interviews because I think they're really interesting and they went a little bit longer than I wanted them to just because I was busy talking and busy listening to all the fascinating stuff going on. So I'm going to load those up next and we're right back with the first interview. Welcome back to Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Tim Estradal. On today's episode, we have special guest Dave Johnson of KT's Power. I'm going to try to say that correctly. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
And we've been talking off the air a little bit. And he's really passionate about the company, and I'm really passionate to learn more about the company. It's a very interesting product that I'm excited to talk about because I think there's a lot of good applications for this, especially in the marketplace. So why don't you tell us about KT's Power?
KT's Power is a 13-year-old company now, founded by a guy that I had a chance to meet back in 2008, Dr. James Lemke. He's the founder of our company. And back in the late 90s, he went looking for a better engine for his airplane of all things and started learning about the history of engine development from the very earliest stages, 1900s, early 1900s. And he quote-unquote discovered that there was this engine pioneered by Hugo Junkers in Germany called an opposed piston engine, and that this engine had set records for fuel efficiency and power density. And Jim, our founder, asked the question, well, where's that engine now? It is a really important attribute of engines in the marketplace today. Why don't we have this engine in our cars and trucks today, and planes for that matter? And so he did some work. Jim's a theoretical physicist, so he went to work on solving the problem for the opposed piston engine. And in 2004, decided that there was enough merit, enough good ideas that he should form a company, and that was the beginning of KT's Power.
Yeah, and so for people to understand, we're talking about a new engine technology that has been out, but we're reinducing it, and it's an opposed piston engine. So how do you describe this engine to people? I've seen video, I have an idea, but I'd be curious to see your explanation.
Yeah, the way I explain it basically is if you'd imagine maybe a six-cylinder inline conventional engine with six pistons, crankshaft, and a cylinder head on top of valves and valve springs and camshafts and so forth. If you simply remove that cylinder head, all the valves and camshafts, and just throw that away, our engine does not have any of those parts. And then you saw that engine in half right between cylinders 3 and 4. So you have three pistons here and three pistons there. And then you flip that one engine on top of the other to basically create a two crankshaft engine with six pistons and three combustion chambers. You now have an opposed piston engine. So the fundamentals of our engine basically is two piston per bore. So, you know, we're very fond in the marketplace, we're used to saying, hey, it's a six-cylinder engine or an eight-cylinder engine. Well, in the future, we talk about three-cylinder engines that are all going to have six pistons. Mm-hmm. We talk about four-cylinder engines, they're all going to have eight pistons when they come to Paris for us. And the beauty of doing that, basically, is by putting two pistons per combustion chamber, is you're able to extract more work and waste less energy to heat losses. So in the conventional engines, we run water through the cylinder head to keep the cylinder head cool, and we just reject that waste heat to the environment, and it's pure waste. In our engine, we don't have to cool the cylinder head because we don't have one. We run our pistons hotter than the cylinder head, and so the fundamentals of the engine allow it to be more efficient than a conventional engine on the order of 20 to 30%.
Yeah, and it's fascinating to watch. I'll put it up on our Facebook page. There's a video that you guys have created. And essentially, these pistons, they look like they're about to hit each other. They stop in the chamber. And then your combustion happens, your fuel, your air, your fire. And then it pushes these pistons away from each other. And that's how the engine fires. It's a fascinating new take on the engine. But one of the things I thought was interesting in the
history was there was concerns about emissions. There was problems with emissions in the older engines, which is why they get away from it. But you guys have solved the emissions issue on this new engine, correct?
That's right. And that's a very important ingredient in what we've done. Jim's idea was that we have all these modern tools and modern capabilities, none of which have been applied to the opposed piston engine to solve the fundamental challenge of the opposed piston engine. So as an example, back in the day when engines were developed, the opposed piston engine was invented by Hugo Junkers and others. There was no computational fluid dynamics. This is an engineering tool that uses massive computing power to basically trace and follow and understand the combustion process as it takes place almost at the molecular level. And so we have that capability now, and deploying it on the opposed piston engine, we solved the problems of the dirty emissions that those engines used to have. And we've now demonstrated in our labs here in San Diego that our engines not only meet emissions, but they do so more easily and better than conventional engines. And so they offer the opportunity to meet emissions, be more fuel efficient, and for the engine not to cost more than conventional engines. So really kind of a trifecta, if you will, of attributes for the engine industry.
Yeah, and you guys have done a lot of work recently on starting to get this engine to the marketplace. You're working with the Department of Defense, isn't that right?
That's right. We have published and publicly announced contracts with the Department of Defense, the Department of Energy, and we're working with Cummins on our military project, and we're working with a company called Fairbanks Morris that's located in Wisconsin that makes very large opposed piston engine for power generation, marine applications, standby power, baseload power. Very, very interesting, exciting project we have with Fairbanks Morris.
Yeah, and the information I saw the other day was that you guys are working on a new 2.7-liter engine you're going to use for consumers. It's going to come in a diesel and a gasoline as well?
Right. So we were very pleased to win a contract from the RPE organization, which is part of the U.S. Department of Energy. They work on advanced programs. And what they asked us to develop was an all-new light-duty engine to run on gasoline. So we're going to run our engine on gasoline with compression ignition, so it'll be very, very efficient. And we've actually already run our existing engine, and we're designing this new engine. And as you mentioned, Jim, the new engine is a 2.7-liter, three-cylinder engine. Makes about 270 horsepower, 650 newton meters of torque. It's really perfect and designed for full-size pickup trucks and sport utilities, whether it's a Ford Expedition or a Dodge Ram 1500. Those products will be perfect for this engine, and we think with our technology, with both gas and diesel, we'll be able to help manufacturers meet the CAFE 2025 standards, which is about 33 miles per gallon for that product.
Yeah, and where are you at in the development of that? I was thinking that was the fall of next year. You were hoping to have a prototype?
We will. We'll be showing a prototype next year. So that's just around the corner for us. Currently, all the drawings are coming off the quote-unquote drawing board, which of course don't exist anymore. It's all in the tube.
Right, right.
And we send them out to our suppliers. We get the parts. We're going to be building engines in a few months. So the hardware is designs are nearly complete. And prototypes will be built soon, and shortly thereafter, we'll start putting them in vehicles.
And as you develop this, and as you put in the engines in these vehicles, is there much work being done on, like, existing engine mounts or hooking the transmission? Is there some extra engineering to make all that work?
Yeah, we call that work vehicle integration. So the engine has to be matched and designed to fit with the vehicle, and you know, sometimes some vehicle modifications are required to make it all fit together. In our case, we don't see really any vehicle modifications being required. We've designed the engine to mate the existing automatic transmissions in the vehicle. We've designed it to fit in the engine compartment of those existing vehicles. I'm sure there'll be some plumbing connections that are different, right? The velocity valve a little different, things like that, intake weight valve a little different. But fundamentally, as we develop engines with our customers around the world, we're designing our engines to fit in existing vehicles because most manufacturers don't want to do a new vehicle and a new engine at the same time. So we need to show that our engines fit in existing vehicles, and they do.
Yeah, and getting back to integration and thing what earlier said was about the cooling the head. Do you have to have a radiator then? Do you still use a radiator in those engines?
Yeah, so you'd love to design the engine that's perfectly efficient, that rejects no heat, but ours is not yet that engine. We still have some heat rejection to do. We have some going out the exhaust, just like a regular engine. We have less going to radiator. So we'll still need a radiator, but the radiator can be about 30% lower than on a conventional vehicle. And we reject some heat to the oil also. So on our engine, we have two pistons that form a combustion chamber. There's a significant amount of heat that does go through the piston. We run a two-stroke cycle, so we have a combustion event on every turn of the crank instead of every other turn of the crank. And so we're projecting significant energy also to the oil. But in total, about 20 or 30% less energy is rejected with our engine than a conventional engine. That's where the efficiency comes from.
Sure. And on the oil, are you finding that synthetic oils still working out well for that? Are you playing around different oils to work well?
Now, one of the things that we feel is very important for our engine is that it fit in our, I'll call it the ecosystem of automotive. So basically everything that we have about our cars and trucks today, we like to fit within that. So we use the same fuel, gasoline and diesel, you can buy at the gasoline station today, standard oil. So we'll use state-of-the-art oils, which are synthetic oils, but we don't need a special formulation. Similarly, we don't need special modifications to the vehicle to fit the engine. So an important part of what we do is that the engine is while it's very unique in and of itself, it doesn't require that we change our behaviors, driving behaviors, refueling behaviors. So all the challenges of range anxiety and the cost of other alternatives, we avoid all those challenges.
It's a fascinating project, a fascinating idea, engine idea. When you bring this to market, are you anticipating that it'll come through a manufacturer, or would there be a possible for like a crate engine program?
Well, my experience, I started my career working for Ford. We had our SVO organization, and crate engines are derived from production engines. The way a Katie's Power will work is that basically we've developed this technology, and we're now helping manufacturers, all the ones we know by name in the marketplace, basically, to bring these engines from our labs to their factory. We don't need new engine factories to build this engine. It's made with the same kinds of materials to make engines from today. So, you know, coming full circle to answer your question, the manufacturers that we know and buy vehicles from today and that make engines today, they're going to propose piston engines and our technology in the future to put them in their vehicle. And so you'll buy them the same way, and you'll experience them the same way. And I look forward to the crate engine for performance models that you can buy from the same manufacturers, but now opposed to piston engine design.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to watch. I mean, there's so much going on in the marketplace with the small displacement turbo diesels going out, with hybrids, with EV vehicles, and here's yet another option that manufacturers could buy into and bring to the marketplace.
Yeah, and it's a really exciting time for us. We've seen our business pick up dramatically just over the last few years, and we're forecasting more growth as we move forward because the pressures in the marketplace, both from regulation and from customers, both in passenger cars and trucks, and really in every market around the world, clean engines, very clean engines that have low fuel consumption and don't cost a lot, are very much of interest to the marketplace. And so we're excited with the developments that are happening in Katie's Power working with our customers.
I couldn't agree more. It's fascinating stuff. I'm just enthralled by it. I'm going to go ahead and do a lot more research and keep reading about it, because I can't wait to see what's happening in the future for you. So thanks for being on the program.
Thanks so much, Tim. I greatly appreciate it. I look forward to staying in touch.
Thanks. We'll be right back with more Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. And welcome back to Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Tim Espridal. We have a special guest today. We have Steve Catrino. He is the... he's with the Checker Motor Company. I don't know your official title, Steve. What's your title there?
Vice President.
Vice President. And he's on the road, which is pretty appropriate for the conversation. You're bringing back the Checker Motor Car name, but you've owned it. And then what's exciting, what we're talking about today, is you're going to build a pickup.
Yes, we are, a sport pickup.
So how did you get this idea?
Well, what we were originally was a restoration shop, besides our other businesses, which we actually are modifiers for Ford, General Motors, and Chevrolet. We actually started restoring Checker automobiles. So, you know, you go to a SEMA, and all of a sudden you're looking for a floor pan, and you have the floor pans punched out. And the next thing you know, you're looking at a frame, so you have a frame made. And then the idea gets in your head, well, if we can make these parts that are interchangeable, is it a viable option to build something that is not available? So something like a cross between an automobile and a truck, but not one or the other, a little of both. And we're also doing a six-door touring sedan as well.
Right. And I saw that touring sedan, and that is a long car.
Yeah, it sure is. And what we wanted was something that was a cross, again, between a sedan and a van. We're not looking to try and mass produce, you know, thousands and thousands of these. We'd love to, and, you know, that may happen. But what we're looking for is niche markets where somebody would want something that has a look that's different that would be used for, say, a promotional type item. So like a carpenter or a builder or plumber or something, or a delivery service that would want something that catches an eye and not only does the work, but is a moving billboard. That's, you know, today that's what it's all about, is getting noticed. So we figured, why not give it a try and work with it?
Yeah, and the sport truck is really unique looking. It's, how would you describe it? It's like a 50s, 60s vintage look on it with the El Camino back?
Well, you know, there's still a little bit more sharpening we're going to do to it, and that's why we need a little more time. The legislation was passed allowing low-volume manufacturers to manufacture automobiles, but there's like 35 of us who are waiting for NHTSA's guidelines on that that process. So it's passed through legislation, but it actually hasn't been finalized through NHTSA. And what we want to know is, well, is there anything that we need to be aware of, or is there nothing that we need to be aware of? Right now, it's simply a vehicle that replicates something from the past. So we don't know what things we may have to do that'll change the look. You know, our 3D model is kind of a comparison of, you know, the look of a Checker with the back of an El Camino, but we'll certainly, you know, shave down spots and make it a little more sporty. We actually had a designer from Italy do some work for us, and his designs were lower to the ground and a lot more stealthy looking. So, you know, we thought that was a little bit too far, but somewhere in the middle.
Right. And where are you going to build these at? Are you going to build them at your facility there in Massachusetts?
Well, you know, you said a word, and I just want to let everybody know that build is not many companies build automobiles anymore. They assemble them. And so we're going to assemble in Haverhill.
Okay.
And what we're going to do is we're not going to production line. We're going to assemble them in cells, so we're able to do, you know, whatever it is that a customer may want, whether it be a sport pickup or a touring sedan. So we'll have that flexibility. So it'll be more like picked up from a kit car.
Right, and assembling these, you talked about how you're going to make them off-the-shelf parts. They're going to be pretty easy to put together.
Well, that's what our goal is, to use as many off-the-shelf parts as we can. But in the same token, anything we make, we want to try to make it so it's universal to fit the first generation Checkers from Checker Motor Corporation that actually made the vehicles up till 1982.
Right. And on this truck, it's going to have a GM engine. Let's talk about powertrain. GM engine and then a GM transmission?
Well, that's our basic plan, is to go with a V8 and a regular GM type driveline, which is very simple and available. But, you know, as the time goes by, we're starting to get a lot more interest in alternative, you know, fuels, compressed natural gas, possibility of a diesel. So these drive lines are now available. So it's not as hard as it used to be, say, 10 years ago, because now, you know, there's a lot of companies that make something that needs a drivetrain. So there's companies that actually produce drivetrains that, you know, are very nice and have a lot of technology in them.
Yeah, and they probably would bolt right into you're going to do the fully boxed steel frame throughout?
Well, that's one of the things that we're proud to say. Yes, we are going to use a box steel frame so that we can replicate the mounting points of the first generation checker. So although it'll be a new design, a new technology, we want to be able to say, well, if you want to take your old body and say, put it on a new chassis, we're going to be able to resto-mod it. So we're going to have one frame that meets both wheelbases. And what we'll do is we'll have a center section that's removable added to make the longer wheelbase. So one frame with a middle section that is going to be added for the longer wheelbase.
That's impressive. That'd be really cool to be able to have one frame to be able to resto old checker taxis. How much engineering is going involved in that frame? Is that a big obstacle?
Actually, it's not.
Really?
We thought that it was originally going in, and you know, you find a supplier at SEMA, and you think, wow, you know, this is going to be a pretty big task. Well, you find 10, 15 companies that'll do it now. So, you know, if we need them in big quantities, we go to the big box guys, the Buds and people like that. When we stay small, we can use a lot of the boutique frame makers, Fat Man, Progressive Engineering. I mean, they're all willing to work with us to build us a frame, especially something that, you know, we can use and sell in addition to the amount of vehicles that we're allowed to offer in quantity.
Yeah, so speaking of offering in quantity, what's the top number for low volume?
At 325, then it's no longer low volume. So, you know, we don't think we're going to be anywhere near there, but that's the number.
Okay, so you're going to be able to have this design and have all the parts and have it all figured out, engineered, and then if somebody orders this vehicle from you, you're going to just call up your parts suppliers and get all the parts together and assemble it in your shop. Is that about accurate?
Well, yeah, essentially that'll be it. I mean, of course, there's going to be some commitment for some of the unique items.
Sure.
You know, large quantities that'll have to be made to keep it, you know, to keep the cost down. But, essentially that'll be it. I mean, you know, a lot of the parts that we'll be using will be very familiar. And, you know, you can buy a brand new 56 Chevy. You can buy, you know, a brand new Chevy pickup today in components. So we're going to use a lot of the components that are available to be able to build or assemble, if you will, a vehicle.
Yeah, and I was reading an interview you gave, and you were talking that maybe a price range would be 40s to 50s, somewhere in that range. Is that still kind of accurate?
That's where we want to stay for pickup. The sport pickup's relatively easy because there's already a body shell made, and if that meets the NHTSA requirements, all we have to do is make some modifications to what's already available, which would be really nice. If we have to deal with a different set of regulations, then we would probably have to, you know, do something different. The six-door is a little more complicated because there's not a body shell available. So we're going to, you know, we'll have to look at that once we know what the regulations are going to be that it'll have to meet, if any.
So, and you're still waiting on these regulations. So is that really what's holding up the process? I mean, you guys ready to go to production or to assemble them?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we have been told it can be done. We're protected by legislature that says you can do it. But, you know, NHTSA hasn't made any recommendations. So this, like as I said, you know, there's a lot of companies. There's Factory 5, there's DeLorean, just to name a few. There's a lot of us, and we're all waiting for the replies from NHTSA to say, you know, what's going to happen. I mean, anybody can build anything and not put an engine in it. Once you put an engine in it, then it becomes an automobile, and that's when the regulations kick in. Up until recently, 2015, which isn't really that recent, but you couldn't put an engine in a vehicle. You could have another company that puts an engine in, but all the, I don't want to say liability, but all the regulation requirements fall on the person or company that puts the engine in. So you can go that far, but you could never go to the next level. So at this point, I think everybody's kind of waiting. Nobody wants to build a vehicle and then have, you know, the regulations come down and, you know, you could have redesigned something and met the regulations, and then you have something that doesn't meet. So, especially with us, because we're going to make a commitment, because we're going to be like the original trucker. We're going to keep the look the same for a long time, so we can make that commitment. We're not looking to say, oh, well, this is a 2 or 3 year thing, and we'll then, you know, make it a low ride or a lower roof or, you know, more aerodynamic. We want that iconic look, and that's what we're banking on.
Well, come on, NHTSA, get your stuff together. I want to see one of these trucks. I want to go out and drive it. I want to see what the. I want to get excited about it.
Well, we're excited, and I know the people at DeLorean are excited. In Factory 5, we're all excited. It's a big group, and there's a big, you know, group of customers who want that ability. They want something that replicates a Cobra or replicates, you know, something, a DeLorean or whatever, and it just hasn't come down yet. So we know Dynacor makes all these bodies, and Year One makes all these components, so you can take a catalog and buy everything you need and put a car together. But the minute you put a car together and sell it, well, you know, you got to worry about what NHTSA's going to say. So yeah, that's essentially it. Well, we're waiting for the word.
It sounds fantastic, and thanks for being on the show today.
Well, it's my pleasure, and, you know, anything to do with wheels, we love it, and keep on driving.
And where can people find out more about the Checker Motor Company?
Well, everything is on our website at checkermotorcars.com, and we also update the Facebook page every day or two. So they can find us on Facebook at Checker Motor Cars.
I tell you what, go check them out. It's really cool stuff. It's fun to look at. And you're right, it's definitely different, and it's appealing that it's different. And we'll be right back with more Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. And that's it for this week's edition of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. Remember, I'm making the big trip next week. I'm gone all week. I'm going to visit some really cool places. Arconic, which is a aluminum manufacturing place, the milling place. I'm going to visit a Fiat powertrain facility. I'm going to go to Chicago Auto Show. I'm going to report live from the show. Lots of great stuff going on, and we'll talk about, I'm driving a Silverado soon. I'm driving a Colorado work truck soon. I'm driving Tacoma off-road soon, Tacoma TRD Pro. I got a lot of cool stuff coming your way. So stay tuned for more, and remember to go to Facebook and like us on Pickup Truck Talk. Email me at tim@pickuptrucktalk.com. Let me email some questions, suggestions. I like suggestions. I anticipate I need to get better at this. I always think that way. So any thoughts you have for that, you know, look us up. Pickuptrucktalk.com is a website. Make sure you visit that and leave some comments on some of the stories. I don't share a lot of stuff on there, but, you know, things that I publish elsewhere, since I'm a freelance journalist, I need to put them together. And you'll see some stuff like that. Yeah, and keep me in touch. You know, keep reaching out and let me know what you think of the show. And we'll see you down the road.